Good afternoon. Good afternoon. It's definitely a good afternoon. Not quite totally as good as last afternoon, but nonetheless,
we'll take it.
Yeah, we'll take it. Yep. The sun is always shining here at Boat Talk. And Boat Talk is a call-in show. I'll give the numbers out in a little bit after John gives his boatyard report. But we have several things to talk about today, and you can certainly add to it, too, when we get around to it. But first, we'll let John launch right into several things that are happening on the boatyard scene.
Oh, we've got a lot since we weren't here last month.
Yeah.
So let's start down in Harpswell with C.W. Johnson. Walked into their shop, and that's Chip Johnson. He's a lobster fisherman, and he only opens his shop mostly for the winter months. He probably starts in January and works his way probably maybe to May. But anyways, in there is a Morgan Bay 43, which is owned by Tom Clemens. And anybody who follows the lobster boat races closely will know Tom Clemens. He's been around for a long time, always has one of the faster diesel boats. Well, he's done it this time. He bought the Morgan Bay 43. Then he turned around and went to Florida and bought a 1,700 horsepower V12 man.
V12?
Yep, V12.
Wow.
It's a running takeout. I don't know what they took it out of, but they took it out.
Some
anyway.
World War II airplane.
Well, almost as bad. So anyway, so she's been pulled out. When I was there, they were waiting for the shaft and shaft tube to arrive. That was coming from Roses Marine in Gloucester. And the only thing that they're putting in her is just a small V berth, because you don't want any added weight in this poor thing because it's going to be raced. So yeah. We were hoping to see the boat this year at the lobster boat races, but unfortunately they're going to wait for a gear, and because, I mean, this is a lot of horsepower with a lot of torque. So you're probably going to wait till next year to see her, because wow, they're thinking that the gear is out maybe 10
Is the exhaust going to go in the water?
No,
I was thinking of the sound.
It's probably it's dry exhaust.
Yeah.
So comes out the stern. But, you know, getting a little off topic, talking about diesel motors, I just picked up a book on Rudolf Diesel. And that's really, really interesting, and how he developed the diesel engine and some of the plate that he had and where he came from. He was a very poor man. They were actually kind of kicked out of France, because they were German and the Germans had overrun them. This would be the late 1800s. Mm. And so he ended up in England into some of the very poor sections of London. And then he went back to Germany to a relative and was actually able to get a good education, probably better than most, in a private school. And even there, he was starting to develop the idea of a diesel engine, because he knew Otto, and Otto was the man behind the steam engine. But anyways, it's an interesting book, because the mystery is all about what happened to him, because he was found, his body was found, but they don't know if he was pushed or whether somebody helped him over the side of the steamer as they went around on the English Channel. Uh-huh. But anyways, getting back at Boat Talk. So next to in Chip Johnson's shop is also Five Stars, and you said that diesel engine came out of what? Well, his engine came out of a tank in France. It's a Mack engine. He loves the Mack engine. So he's got a Renault 750 horsepower. But his problem was with the manifolds. They were leaking. So he had to send them to Marine Exhaust Systems in Alabama. He finds that these guys are really, really good at what they do. So, and then they got a couple of boats coming in for repairs. Holland Boat Shop, the big project there is a Holland 38 that they're doing for a customer in San Diego. She's going to look not so much like a typical down east boat, except for a hull. The cabin's going to look a little different. It's going to have the teardrop windows down the side and curled after end of the house and stuff like that. And she's powered with a 550 horsepower Cummins. There's a Holland 32 in the back, and she's going to a customer in Yarmouth, and she should be ready this spring. In the layup shop, they've got 414s underway. Those are always a big seller. And then they're getting ready to lay up a hull, 38-foot hull for Roke Island. And they're going to finish off, and that should be done hopefully sometime this fall. Now, Little River Boat Shop down in Cutler is a very interesting place to go stop in. During the winter, they do at least one boat, if not maybe one boat and a couple repair jobs, that sort of thing. And that's what they're doing this year. They've got a Calvin Beale 44 hull and top in there that is being finished off as a split wheelhouse lobster boat for a fisherman from South Thomaston, powered with a 13-liter, 800-horsepower Scania with a 2.5-to-1 ZF transmission and a 2.5-inch shaft. So this boat, it's amazing how fast that crew works. They're very, very efficient. You know, if you want to see what it used to be like to go into a shop and everybody's working, that's where you go.
Yeah. When you say crew, that's coordination between people who work together.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good thing to watch.
And it's hard to find.
That's true.
And after this one, they've got a Libby 47 coming in to be repowered. The man that's in her had a little problem, I think, with the electronics, but that seemed to have been cleared up, but the guy's still going to change over to a Scania. Then Joe Sargent's shop, now that's in Millbridge. For those that run through Millbridge, most of us turn right and run down Route 1A because it's shorter. But if you go towards Cherryfield on Route 1, he's down there maybe a mile on the right side. And he's got a Northern Bay 41 in there that's being finished out as a sport fishing boat that's going to go to Long Island, New York. She's got full interior, all kinds of bells and whistles like all of these boats are now becoming. Mm-hmm. Very, very complicated. And she's supposed to be done and out sometime middle spring, so I would bet sometime in May. Then he's got 236 Calvin Beale hulls coming in. Both of them going to be pleasure boat. One's going to Brooklyn, New York, and the other one's going to Martha's Vineyard. In the other bay, he was working on a Crowley Beale 33 that, for those from Stonington might remember, it was formerly Jeff Eaton's boat some 20 years ago. And then it went to Lemoyne. And then this customer from Bonaire bought it, and they have totally redone this boat so it doesn't even look like a lobster boat anymore.
Huh.
They redid the house, refaired it. What they did do that was really funny is they put all of the structure to make the roof very sturdy on top, mm-hmm. not inside.
Over the top?
Over the top. So you got. So huh. I don't know if you want to carry stuff. It'll be looks, you know, like it's a good carrying
sort
way.
Of
but
expedition effect.
Yeah, well, it was different. And anyways, and I'm sure that I'm going to butcher this because I know that I don't pronounce it right, but Barracuda Boatworks. Most everybody on the coast knows it as Moses Ortiz. He runs it, and he's a good finisher. The shop is actually at Kennedy Marine Engineering or Revolution Marine Engineering, and that's down in Steuben, just across from H&H Marine before you actually get into Millbridge. And this winter, they had Jason Chipman's Miss Amity in there, and it's got to be the Muscle Ridge 46 that they had in there. She had a little bit of damage from some of the storms, and then they did a lot of work to her, just upgrading her and getting her ready. And she's now down in Massachusetts with a lot of boats from up here in Maine, scalloping, because a lot of them have bought the scallop permit.
Mm-hmm.
And so they run down to Gloucester, and there's a whole bunch of them from Maine that sit over at Gloucester Marine Railway. And what he had in the first bay was she's all wet. She's owned in Cherryfield, if I'm not mistaken. Ken Geiger is his name that owns the boat. And she was in for basically a total rehab. And she was repowered four years ago. She was repowered with an 800 horsepower Scania. And this time came in and they redid the split wheelhouse. They've added a custom sliding door. They put new paint and repaired some damage to the skeg that she got in one of the storms that we had on the coast. Next to her is a 41 Northern Bay, and that's a 38 stretch 3 feet. And she's a sport fishing boat that's going to a customer from Connecticut. And she's almost done. They was just basically doing the wiring and putting in some of the final details on the interior. The next one coming in is Eiler and Grayson. That's Travis Perry's boat. He's from Columbia Falls. She's a Westmac 50 with a 900 horsepower Scania. She's coming in to be repowered. He's bought some engine out of Florida, a running takeout that he's going to install. I guess he bought a pair of them. And then they're going to do some minor upgrading. And then after that, he's got a Calvin Beale 38 lobster boat that's coming in. That's going to be finished off for a customer in California. Now, Brooklyn Boatyard is always one of the most interesting places I stop into. Mm. And it's fun to go in there. And I don't know where they find all the people, but they got plenty of them. And the one that was I'll talk about is they've got him learning how to do woodwork. I mean, real, you know, not cold molded. He's actually working on a traditionally plank boat. But we'll first cover the Wheeler 55, which is nearing completion. So probably back in January, February, the hull is sitting in the main bay. Like I said, it's a 55-footer. Next to it, underneath the mezzanine, they put together the cabin. And then they put that on, say, January, February. And then just about 3 weeks ago, they had finished the shelter and the shelter top, and that's now on top of the boat.
So they have hoists to pick all these things up and drop them in place.
Yep. Yeah, because they do the interior. Most of some of the interior is done up on the third floor.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the pieces that they were working on was the instrument panel. It was a beautiful piece of, looked like teak. Huh. But anyway, she is almost ready. They are now putting the interior in and systems, and she's scheduled to be finished the end of June with sea trials to follow, and hopefully they said they're going to deliver the boat in mid-July. And I asked about whether she's going to be at any of the boat shows. Now, she's going to be owned by a customer from Cape Cod, and they're not sure that he's going to give it up for the short season that he's going to get. But they're hoping that at least be at one or two of the boat shows this fall. But anyways, and then the second one's right behind it. As they built this one, anything that they could duplicate or anything they had to jig, they duplicated it because they knew they had another 55 behind it. And that's actually going to go to Wes Wheeler. And he's a relation to the actual people who started the Wheeler Company, which was a big boat company back in the anywhere from the 30s up to the 60s. I think the company failed in the 60s. Actually, they were financially ruined by the war, and they never could recoup it, and then the fire happened. But anyways, so he's got a lot of that stuff. And then when they were buying items for the boat, they actually duplicated that. So a lot of the material is already there waiting just to go in. Now, Brian Larkin, who's the president of Brooklyn Boatyard, also added that Wes would like to actually do a more utilitarian boat, saying that the ones that he's actually producing right now, he calls them varnish farms, and because there is so much varnish on these boats that it's ungodly to maintain. So he thinks that there's a whole other market if they do a boat that doesn't have as much varnish.
Yeah, all that varnish holds up much better if you don't put it outside.
Exactly. Yeah, like keep it in the shed.
Yeah.
And then they have already started a 56-footer world cruising sailboat designed by Mark Fitzgerald. I think Mark lives down in Thomaston or Rockland. He's right there on the border anyways. He actually works in a place in the Rockland Industrial Park. He's designed this boat, and that thing's going to be ready to actually start putting together as soon as they find a space available. Then they've also got somebody that wants to have a 47-foot main down east style powerboat. He had a Back Cove, liked the Back Cove, but he wanted something that was a little more personable and that also could handle the chop in New Jersey really well. Usually I hear the complaints about chop is in Buzzards Bay, but I'm sure New Jersey's not very nice either with a chop. Now, Steve White, who stepped down as president a year ago, he's always still involved in the company, and I don't think he'll ever not be involved in the company. But his father designed a double-end runabout, and they're going to build one of these. It's going to be stretched to 40 feet, and that's so the owner can put in his custom-made Italian V16 engine.
V16?
Just keep getting bigger.
Was a lot.
Yeah, that's how it works. You just keep getting bigger.
You have to have a long boat for that.
And then they've been talking with a potential customer for the West Coast. He owns a 72-foot Phil Rhodes-designed Escapade, which is a great big sailboat. And he's talking about totally rebuilding this boat. Then they had a Chris Craft that came in that they did some bottom work on. They put a new bottom on her. They redid the top sides cosmetically. But now they're waiting for the engine, and they send it to a company called Van Ness Engineering in Fairfield, New Jersey. And these people are so popular at what they do, they only work on classic boat engines, like Chris Craft and Gray Marine, all of these old engines, Sterlings, that sort of thing. Anyways, well, they're still waiting on the engine, and they're not sure when they're going to get it back. Now, getting back to that little tug that I was talking about, this thing's only, it was designed by Pete Culler. I think she's 16 feet.
16.
Ready for the plank size?
How wide is it?
Well, she's not very wide.
Okay.
You ready for the plank size? How about 2.5-inch plank?
It's almost cold molded.
Well, but this is real stout planks that Peter Chase and Brian Larkin actually built in 1988. She's just in because the stern post was rotted out. So they're teaching this young guy how to do traditional repair work and how to do the woodwork that you need to do that with. So she was actually a replica of Gracie, which was a little harbor tug that was used at Concordia in Paint Nerum, which is South Dartmouth, Massachusetts. Now, several years ago, those that follow the lobster boat racing will remember a small boat, 25-footer, that was powered with a 292 Chevy engine called Crybaby.
I remember the name.
Yep. These guys from Lewiston, Auburn, built that boat by looking at other designs, and they actually lofted it and did everything themselves. They were really not boat builders. One of them was an engine guy because he's the one that built the 292, and the other one was, I think, a Latin teacher. But they did a very nice job. They did it cold molded. Well, they sold the original Crybaby, and they had started to build another one, but age got in the way. They were 80, some health issues, and Steve White turned around and bought this boat. Well, she's up in the Oddfellows Hall, which is the building as you turn to go down into Brooklyn Boatyard. Yeah, it's right on your right side. Mm-hmm. You won't miss it because it's right there on the corner.
Yes, yeah, a big old building.
Yep, but it's all nice. You go in there, they're doing all kinds of neat projects in there. And so this one, they've put the house on her, and they've put a 383 in her. And so she might be ready, and I'm trying to get him to come to the lobster boat races, at least in Stonington, so that people can see what they call D&L boat works had actually started, but unfortunately couldn't finish. Now, they did suffer some damage down there, and one of the interesting ones was the floor in the dinghy shop kind of raised up. And Brian says, well, every year we used to have to do that because of ice got underneath it and pushed up the floor. And they had to nail it back down every spring. But this year it actually was water that did it. They also lost their dock that goes out. But they had a little foresight. I don't know if they had got a call from way above or not. But they actually looked at the dock, thought that they had some issues, and they turned around and had a construction company coming in April this year.
Scheduled ahead of time.
Yeah. Way ahead of time. So they're way ahead of the curve.
Yeah, that's good.
Well, today it was interesting. I got a call from FEMA. They were actually in Winterport looking to see who they could help.
Huh.
So I'm going to put it in.
Chummy.
Well, does he own the dog?
No. He doesn't own any of that anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, I know the whole thing's gone, isn't it?
Yeah, it's all gone.
Yeah. And for those that didn't know, that's on Bernard's side. And that was Bobby Rich's shop, which would have been, what was his boat shop called? Rich's, wasn't it Rich's Boat Shop?
Yeah, I think it was called Rich's Boat Shop.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, oh, no, wasn't it Bass Harbor Boat?
Well, yeah, it became Bass Harbor Boat.
Yeah, yes, was right. That when Chummy got it?
That was when Chummy took over, yeah.
But anyways, so let's go to Morgan Bay Boats. Now, they are building a 43-footer. This is a big sport fisherman going to Cape Ann, powered with a C-18 Caterpillar, which is over 1,000 horsepower, just over 1,000 horsepower. But once this is done, and this one will be done in a month or two, they're going to switch to building a Morgan Bay 47. The mold was nearly finished. They were putting the skids on it, and then they were going to cover the exterior of the hull with gel coat to protect it from UV light. And then they have already sold two of these boats, both of them going to Long Island, New York. And then he and I got into the discussion of how complicated sport fishing boats have become. And they've just got everything and their brother under the sun in these things. Mm-hmm. And then he talked about, have you ever done a get-home system? This is a hydraulic system that hooks to the shaft.
Oh, no, no, no. No, get home system for me is a paddle.
Well, the way he talks about it, and it would cost you about $100,000 to put one of these things in, he says it's a horror show. And I'm not sure, you know, without looking at it, but he says you can't get to anything to fix it because this hydraulic hose is going everywhere. You can't use the same hydraulic pump off the main engine because that's failed. The main engine's down. So you've got to have another hydraulic pump with another hydraulic tank.
Sounds like it was something that was dropped in before the deck went on.
But even when, he says it's just – you just can't work underneath the decks. Huh. You know, maybe in a big boat it's all right, but even then he says the best they got out of it was 4.5 to 5 knots. So if the tide's against you in some places, you're going backwards.
Yep.
Let's go to SW Boatworks there in Lemoyne. That's Stuart Workman. Caught him inside a boat, actually putting down a deck, and we found out that it's a Calvin Beal 36 that he's building as a lobster boat for himself. She's powered with a 450 horsepower QSL9 Cummins, and he wants the boat in the water by June 1st. But this is a very stripped-out boat. This is just a couple of berths and maybe a little place where you can put a coffee maker and a microwave. Huh. That's it.
Yeah.
So he probably will be able to do that.
And he's going to have to retire to go fishing, though.
Well, he does that now.
Yeah. He fishes now?
Oh, yeah. Huh? He's been doing it for several years.
Huh.
Yeah, he likes that sometimes better than dealing with
the
boat.
How many traps does he have out?
I don't know. I think it's 400.
Wow, that's quite a lot for building boats, too.
Yeah. But he's kind of turned down on the boat building, and I'll get to that here in a second. Now, across the way, he's got a Calvin Beal 42 that they're finishing off as a sport fisherman for a customer from Biddeford. She's getting close to being done. She's probably going to go in the water in a couple months. And then the other one is also a Calvin Beal 42. She's a pleasure boat, and she's going to Portland. Then there's a possibility of repair, and that's a Young Brothers 45, and some of you may have heard about this. She burned at a boatyard down in Brunswick, and the damage is above the salon main deck and up. So she's pretty heavily damaged, but Stuart says that she really is worth saving. There's a lot of boats still there. There's not as much damage as it looks, but it's still a lot of work.
Yeah, boatyard fires are terrible, aren't they?
Oh yeah, you can't get you can't get fiberglass out, can you?
Well,
it's not easy.
Yeah, and the Hypalon, the inflatables, you can't use water to put those out.
No. No, and it sucks the resin, right? Because the cloth doesn't burn; it just burns the resin.
Something happens that, it just flares up. It like seems to, because many years ago, the Jackson Lab had a fire that I was helping to put out, and you could actually, they had a Hypalon roof on it.
Mm-hmm.
And when he sprayed water on it, you could see it flare up almost like you were throwing gasoline on it. It was pretty amazing.
Huh.
Pretty discouraging.
Okay, then I stopped in at Westmac. Now, Westmac's always got something going on there. So they got 6 bays plus the layup shop. So out in the layup shop, they've got a 50 that's going to be finished off by them as a walk-around for a customer from Houston, Texas. In Bay 1, they've got a Westmac 42. She's being finished off as a split wheelhouse sport fisherman that's going to a customer in Portland. Now in Bay 2, a 46 Westmac sport fisherman, she's going to New Jersey. In Bay 4, they've got one of their boats in that's being altered from jets to pods, and she's almost done. The deck's in, which I mean the platform, and they are now working on the electrical system. Now, in the next bay is where the real challenge comes. That's a Westmac 55, and they're finishing it out for the Maine Marine Patrol. But the big kicker here is that she's going to be a Tier 4 man engine. Well, Tier 4, you've got to do a lot. You hope you got a lot of room to put stuff underneath the deck to comply with Tier 4. That's why most fishermen, they don't have to comply with Tier 4. They only have to comply with Tier 3.
What's the difference?
I don't know. It's in this something in the exhaust system, and it gets really, really hot. And in confined areas, it's going to be a real problem.
Mm.
So I'm not sure how they're going to deal with this.
Huh.
But and when I asked about that, they kind of said, we're working on it. Okay.
Good luck.
Yep. And then Linda Greenlaw, of course, you know, she's married to Steve Wessel. Yeah. She's got a new boat. This is a split wheelhouse Westmac 58 that was originally five ladies. Then she was Discovery, and now she's going to be called Select. And she's actually down at the landing. They have another shop on the shore. And she's down there, and Linda's getting that boat ready with part of the crew. And she will be ready and for the upcoming season because she takes a lot of people out and that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. Then they've got another twin screw Westmac. That's out in the parking lot, and that's for sale. Oh, no, this one's got a new owner. And then the mast, which was built by Cumberland Ironworks down in Durham. And then out in the parking lot is a Westmac 50 by 20. She's for sale, and a Westmac 38 that they're just waiting for the owner to come and pick it up.
Huh. That's always scary.
Yep. So do you want to go into lobster boat racing?
Do I?
Yeah.
With my boat?
No. You can go in your boat.
I can what?
You want to cover lobster boat racing?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, it's coming up. What's it start?
Oh, we got a calendar. And I got the poster at the press right now at Furbush and Roberts. So let's see, June 15th, we started Booth Bay.
So 2 months from
two
now.
2 months, yeah. Right. So the only changes, there's no changes in the rules. The only change we made was in the class, and that was in Class N, which is 40 foot and over. And that was 1,000 horsepower and over. So what we did is we lowered it. And now it is diesel class NA is 40 feet and over, 751 to 1,000 horsepower. And class NB is 40 feet and over, 1,001 horsepower and over. But what a lot of people are waiting to hear, and this is all the rumors that are out there on the coast, Sean Alley's Little Girl, which is a lobster boat that was built in 1981, that's the one that hit the bridge in 1981, Calvin Beale. Brand new boat, hit the bridge in Jonesport, and the baby fell off and went in the drink. And they saw this white thing go by, and that was the baby, and they rescued it. And that's now we call Jeremy Beale. He runs Wayne Beale's boat shop.
Ooh,
so
Jeremy Beale.
Yeah, very just, lucky.
Yes.
So anyways, he had a 466 Ford in that thing, the last we knew. And he hasn't raced for 3 or 4 years because the engine was sent out. Then he only heard last year that actually there was a problem with the engine. And he's a diehard Ford fan. He's as bad as Glenn Holland. The only thing a Chevy's good for is an anchor, and even then it would rust through and set your boat adrift, is what they say. So, but Sean had to go to a Chevy engine if he wanted to race this year, so that's what's coming.
Ooh.
Yeah. So that should be interesting because that boat will do about 50 miles an hour with what, and maybe a little better with the new engine that he's got. Yeah. So then there's Thunderbolt. That's Bruce and Bruce Ingert. They're from Booth Bay. And she's down at Jeremy Beale's boat shop in Jonesport. And that basically got a little upgrade, new paint, that sort of stuff. But they've always had a big engine in it. And supposedly the engine's all together. So between those two, that's going to be a good race. And then add in Randy Durkee over in Islesboro. Somebody just supposedly gave him a blower motor that has about 2,000 horsepower in it. Whew. And so we're thinking that, okay, when the Red Baron had about, well, she had 1,200 horsepower. So whether you believe the 2,000 or not, even if it's 1,200 horsepower, he was doing around 59. Hmm. So this could be interesting. So if all three of them come out, we're going to have really nice races in the gas class, which we haven't had for years, you know. And then, of course, we mentioned Crybaby, and then we mentioned Tom. But the one that we'd like to see out, and I'm not sure it's going to happen, is Wild Wild West. Wild Wild West is sitting out back of CNC Machine in Ellsworth.
Yeah, and I saw they, it.
And they'd really like to upgrade her and make her a little prettier because they really haven't done anything to that boat for years. I mean, the last time they did anything was they had to add structure to the bulkhead up forward and run longitudinal stringers because they were actually, when they plowed through the waves, they were starting to crack the hull up the side of the main bulkhead.
We don't want to do that.
No, although it would be good for pitches, you know.
Yeah.
You know, you make the front page. So anyway, so that boat, along with Maria's Nightmare, too, which is Jeremy Beale's boat, they both have about the same engine, but Maria's Nightmare has 1,300 and Wild Wild West has 1,000 horsepower. But, you know, it'd be great to see them both come out, and hopefully they do. But anyway, so what the schedule is, for those that want to know, so we start in June on the 15th, and we're going to Booth Bay. The following day, we're in Rockland. On the 23rd, we're in Bass Harbor, and on the 29th, we're at Moosebeck Reach, which is Jonesport. Then we have, I got a weekend off. Then July 14th, we're at Stonington. Then on the 21st, we're at Friendship. The 28th, we're in Harpswell. And in August, the 10th, we go to Winter Harbor. And I think this is a big year for Winter Harbor. I don't know, but it might be the 60th. So there'll be a big prize if I know Buddha pretty well. Mm. And on the 11th, we go down to Pemaquid, and we do the Merritt Bracket Lobster Boat races down there. And then on the 17th, we do Long Island, which is off Portland. And the 18th, we conclude the whole season, all 11 races, at Portland and right off the Eastern Promenade. And then on the 19th of October, we hold our annual banquet at Robinson's Wharf on Southport Island.
Yeah. So people want to get information to watch these races. What's the best place to go?
Well, some of them are pretty interesting to go to. Let's see. Booth Bay, you go over to the old Bigelow Lab, and you can sit on the side over there, and you can watch us race. And that's not a bad view. And Rockland is very, very good because you can sit right on the breakwater.
Yeah.
Because we race right down the side of the breakwater.
Oh.
On the inside.
Uh-huh.
And then at Bass Harbor is hard, but most people go over to where Bass Harbor Marine was, or the ferry terminal.
Right.
They watch it there.
Or across on the beach, the rocky beach that's over there.
Yeah. Yep. And then we go to, let's see, Moosebeck is always the bridge. Stand on the bridge.
Yeah, stand.
We're not allowed to race under the bridge anymore because we've hit it twice. So,
Think they don't like the precedent was set in Baltimore.
No. And then we got the Stonington races. Those are kind of hard because you can go over to Conrace, which is in the center, and it's right at the beginning. It's right at the finish line for the races. And if you can walk out there, and I don't know where you get to park or any of that, so there. Friendship is really hard to see. You can come down to the docks on the waterfront and see it out there, but it's always good to grab a boat.
It's crowded there.
Yeah, well, and it's hard to see because there's boats in front of you. It's not a clean shot. Mm. Harpswell is, you can stand, it's Mitchell Field. It was the old fueling dock for the U.S. Navy, especially BIW's boats. And so you can stand there, but the big dock's gone. They let it rot and fall in. So Winter Harbor, most of them go over to Scudic Point, and you can see it from one of the sites there. Mm-hmm. The Merritt Bracket Lobster Boat races, you go to the fort, and there's always maybe several hundred people at the fort watching the races. Mm-hmm. And since there's no Old Bristol Days, that's probably opened up, and you can easily get down in there and watch it.
Yeah, that's
cool. And then Long Island's hard. Because basically you can stand on the ferry dock, but otherwise you better get out on a boat. Mm. And the Portland Lobster Boat Race is the Eastern Promenade. Now, what's easy if you want to listen to what's going on, it's always on Channel 10 VHF.
Ah, yep. I'm thinking once you go big time, you're going to have to get somebody with a drone and a big screen TV. So
oh, yeah. We've had the drone.
You follow the boats along with the drone?
Yep. Oh. Yeah, this guy did some really, really nice video for us about 5 or 6 years ago. So Terry Bovin over in Belfast.
That's on YouTube?
Yeah, I think he's put some of them up.
Hmm. Lobster boat racing.
Yep.
Okay.
And the other thing that I did this time was, and I think we talked about it a little bit last time, I met with Kirsten, who won the Golden Globe race.
Right.
She had come back, and she was in the United States to be awarded the Blue Medal Award from the Cruising Club of America.
Uh-huh.
But it was interesting talking to her about the race, what was the earth-shaking thing. Of course, she didn't know where she was when she crossed the finish line.
I realize that, yeah.
Yeah, and then there was a boat in front of her that had a blue spinnaker, and she thought...
She thought that was it.
She thought that was a competitor that was just, I don't know, several miles in front of her, and actually it was just a cruising boat.
Huh.
But she talked about whether she'd do it again, and she doesn't think so. She thinks that what she wants to do next is the Northwest Passage. She likes adventure.
She likes cold weather too, doesn't she?
Yeah, she's done that for a long time. She's done the cold weather.
Yeah.
But she did say that if she does the Northwest Passage, she will put a heater in the boat, because what she found in this Golden Globe race was that there was a lot of moisture, dampness, and mold. So she,
the moisture gets everywhere.
Yeah. But it was an interesting interview, and her perspective of, you know, the race and why things worked as well as they did.
Is it written up in Maine Coastal News?
Yeah, it'll be one of the major stories this time.
Yeah. So Maine Coastal News, there's all kinds of sites where you can get that. Also, you can get it online.
Oh, yeah.
MaineCoastalNews.com.
Yeah, we're high tech.
Yep. As opposed to Boat Talk. Okay, so let's open up the phones for anybody who would like to join this conversation, whichever way it happens to be going. Our number here is 207-618-8819. That's 207-618-8819. You can also email us here, too, at boattalk@gmail.com. And we'll take an email there, too. But while we're waiting for that, let's go to hurricane season. That's coming up, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Good time for sailing.
Good time for sailing, yeah. It's supposed to be above average as far as activity. They're worried about running out of names again for hurricanes. You know, they're named for alphabetical people's names, except that there's five letters that aren't included. That's letters Q, U, X, Y, and Z.
Why not?
Yeah, why not? And especially if they're going to run out of names, why not? I got an idea. Let's use some more here. So I'm thinking maybe if you would like to make a suggestion for names, just a call into Boat Talk, or you can email us too. But we have a phone call here already. We have Wade on the phone. Good afternoon, Wade. Welcome to Boat Talk.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're doing good.
All right. So I love you guys. This is so much fun for me, being a Midwestern freshwater boat guy. I learned so much, and I've always got so many questions. But today you piqued my interest when you were talking earlier about one of the boats. And said it's a 38-footer, now it's stretched 3 feet to 41. So my question is, I have two questions to that, actually. How do they do that? I mean, what's involved to stretch 3 feet? And number two, why?
Well, it's the easiest way to actually make a 41-footer out of a 38-footer without creating a new mold. If you build a mold, you could have in excess of $300,000 in a mold today.
Sure.
So what they do, and you got to be really, really careful with this, and naval architects would probably cringe if you told them how you do it, is that they actually cut the stern and add to that. But you can't do that with certain boats, and those are the ones that actually have what they call a reverse curve in the bottom. And Calvin Beale is well known for that reverse curve, because if you do it to that boat, the bow goes down. So to cut those boats and add 3 feet, you got to do it in the middle. Now, the best one I know of that did that was Stuart Workman at SW Boatworks did that to a 38. He added 4 feet right about the eyes, so about a third of the way back from the stem. He added 4 feet in there, and that boat is what you see today is the Calvin Beale 42. And it's a beautiful boat. It runs well. It goes through the water really nicely. And Calvin actually watched him do it and told him how he wanted to see it done. And that's how Stuart did it. And that's why it worked so well. But that's the easy way to do it. It is an ever-loving nightmare sometimes to try to marry the pieces together and add that 4 feet. Glenn Holland did it on a 32 that he stretched to 34. And when they got done, they had all these little holes in the side of the boat where they were pulling it out. And I think they called the boat, because they have a habit of using masking tape and taping a new name on the boat that's not really the owner's idea of a name. But I think they called it Birdshot.
Nice. Yes.
His holiness.
Well, cool. Yeah, I mean, you know.
Ooh. Still there, Wade? Nope. We lost Wade, but our number here is 207-618-8819. It's a bit of a challenge when you stretch a boat because the curves have to be sort of blended, I guess is the right word.
Well, especially with some of the older boats because they had tumble homes.
Oh, that's true, too. Yeah, where the deck gets narrower towards the top.
Yeah, the stern.
The stern, yeah.
You know, yeah. But and then Glenn also did one where he took the 38 and made it a 35, so he had to make it smaller. And then he got a call from Nautilus Marine, who does a lot of his prop work. And they go, what'd you do to this boat? Because the efficiency's just – it shouldn't be this good. And so Glenn didn't know if he was just being more particular or he took out something that was actually slowing the 38 or what. Yeah. I don't know if he ever went down because it's owned by Stevie Carver down in Jonesport, over in West Jonesport. Stevie has that boat. And I'm surprised that, you know, that boat hasn't sold more. But, of course, it doesn't have a mold, so it's going to be very expensive to make that change from
a
38.
Yeah, you've got to make a big one and then make it smaller. That's not really
efficient. And, of course, you actually have to bring back the skeg.
Right, yeah. Otherwise, it'll be hanging out the stern.
Right, so now you got another issue. But anyways, you were did you talk to the people down in Baltimore?
Yeah, well, not the people. I talked to an engineer who worked down in Baltimore, and scuttlebutt. We'll put this totally in scuttlebutt. No official word on this, but among the engineers down there was two things. One, they were saying that the bridge that is broken, they really ought to make the piers closer to shore now, so you got a wider distance so that if a boat in the future does go off course, it'll run aground before it hits the piers.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, it makes sense. And they were wondering about why the engine stopped, and I have a little story relating to stopping engines we'll get to in a little bit here. But they say that they have had a problem with silting in and the channel down there quite a bit. So their speculation is that engine sucked up enough silt to clog.
They used to do that up here in the Penobscot, you know. If you go above Bucksport, Billy Abbott, who was a pilot on the Penobscot for like 50 years, he said there's a sawdust pile. And when big vessels went over it, it would suck it into the intake. Yeah. Now, ones that knew it would shut the engines down before they went over it.
Right, and glide over and then start,
and start up again.
Yeah. I had a friend who – he's gone now, but who used to work in big ships sailing around the world, and he was an engineer, and he had one problem with the intake getting clogged. And this is his story with that. No, this is Lester.
I went to Maine Maritime Academy, and it was the smartest thing I ever did. It was a wonderful time. The first week or two was bad when they had the haze in, but it was the best thing for a wise guy. And so I had a pretty good education there. And they actually sent us to New York, where I had a brother. In fact, I had three brothers that went to the Maritime Academy. And the middle one, Niffy, he had shipped with a company, Farallon, and he said, go see the placement officer there. I know him real well, and I know he'll be able to help you get straightened out. So I did. I was in New York for about a week, and finally the company had a job open, so they told me, and I went over to the union hall. You had to join there, and I joined up, and I went on to one of the old C-3s. That was the designation of when it was built, and it was an older type, rounded stern, sharp bow, probably made about 10 knots.
Mm. Single screw?
Single screw, yeah. And I went on as a third engineer and became very good friends with most of the engineers on there, so we had a good ship. And the ship ran to Africa. And I left New York, and 17 days later, they said, you will see Africa tomorrow. And we pulled into Cape Town Harbor, which is right on the southern tip of Africa, and I was saying, this doesn't look right. I don't see any elephants or anything else. It was a huge city, and I mean a beautiful place, a big flat-top mountain, and I mean, I couldn't wait to get ashore, and that's the way it was probably for the rest of my shipping life, was no matter where you went, you always saw something new, and it was very interesting. Let me say this, I've been to Australia, been to New Zealand, I've been through the islands in the Pacific, all through the Mediterranean, all the way around Africa, except for the Suez Canal. I never did go through that. And yes, South Africa was my favorite. I mean, once you got to know the people there, very friendly, and they spoke English, what they do and don't do in a lot of the other African countries. Nice place. In fact, I met my wife there, and we got married. I brought her over here and have lived happily ever after.
You saw the change from cargo to containers.
Yes. When the first ship I went out on, the C3, was what you would call a brig bulk. That meant everything came aboard on a pallet or in a heavy box or something like that.
Or something.
And it was put down into the hold and they could spread it out and fill out everything. And then when the containers came, it was an altogether different game. This break bulk meant that you had to stay in port longer, and that was nice for us because you could work on your machinery and everything while you were there. And when the containers came, I mean, in most of the countries, you come in the morning and you would be out in the afternoon.
Loaded again?
Yeah. No, you'd be in and discharge for that, and then you would go up the coast and discharge what you had, and then when you were empty, you'd turn around and come back. Mm. Yeah, and it really cut down the time that, you know, they had to stay in port because this stuff was zip, zip, zip.
I've gone by some of these container ships. I am amazed at how high they stack those things up.
Everybody, I ask you, you know, why don't they blow over?
Yeah.
Car carriers are the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, of course, all the heavy machinery is in the bottom,
yeah.
And all of your fuel oil and all of your water, everything is way below the waterline. So it's the counterweight that mm-hmm. does it. Yeah.
But geez, don't some of them... Just the containers themselves blow off?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you get into storms. You can't imagine the power of a storm. When you go into a wave and you bury the bow of the ship, sometimes you almost stop.
Hmm.
And they shake. They'll go like that, you know. And, I mean, you don't sleep when you get in a storm like that. And it's... You know, you don't feel right, you don't want to eat, and so you're just hoping that you get into better...
What happens when you lose them? You just...
The containers?
Yeah.
Well, there's nothing you can do. I think they wanted them to try to sink them, if they did. You know, maybe shoot a hole or something in them, because they floated, and I mean, if they're loaded... You know, with sometimes they had rolls of paper in there and whatnot. And
so
I mean,
that's
a heavy weight.
Yeah.
And some, you know, small ship coming along could theoretically, you know, hit it.
Yeah.
Put a hole through it. The ship that I was on was steam turbine. And that meant you cooled all the water after it came through through the turbine. With ocean water. And you had a big intake, which was probably 2.5 feet into this thing. And one night we were somewhere down off the lower part of Madagascar. And the man in the engine room called me and said, there's something wrong here. We're losing vacuum on the main unit. So I ran down, and sure enough, and I says, what the heck can be this? And about then, the telephone rang down there, and the man on watch said, hey, I'm going to tell you something. I don't know what it is, but we're coming up on this big purple fluorescent thing in the ocean here. He says, it, and it's, you know, 2 or 3 miles. And I says, what? And so I ran upstairs, up on the deck, looked out, and sure enough, I mean, this was all purple in the water, and it was a nice calm night.
Like phosphorescence.
Yeah. And so I said, gee, I wonder what that is. And I called the bridge, and the captain says, hey, you better stand by. He says, I'm going to try to get out of this. He says, I think it's jellyfish. And it was. And just about then, we started losing the plant. Because all these jellyfish got into the condenser and shut off the water. And we had to stop, open it up, clean them out, and then start up again. That was one thing. Another phenomenon I saw was 5 water spouts.
Yes, I've seen those.
And they were in a row, just like that. And we were down off the bulge of Africa. And that was very interesting to see. We always saw whales. I mean, they were things like that. And when we used to go through, like, the Panama Canal and things like that, that was very interesting, watching how they did it and walk you through. And when you come out there, you'd always see sea turtles on the other side. We'd go up to California. I mean, the different things for cargo was amazing. You could ship anything, refrigerators, cars.
What about all this homeland security and everything? Did you get involved with that, or was you retired?
At the time when I was there, it was very lax. You know, I mean, there was none of that foolishness. You know, what you had to look out for was stowaways. Hmm. Stowaways, especially from Africa and from the third worlds. You know, they love to get to America, and they would, you know, have somebody help them and get them aboard. And they'd hide somewhere until you get out. And that was the worst thing that a captain wanted to hear was, we got a stowaway.
Yeah.
And they'd usually wait 2 or 3 days, mm-hmm. and then you'd come out and try to find food at night or something. Mm-hmm. And it meant that if they couldn't get him off the ship somewhere, when they got to New York, they put 2 armed guards on it, and the company had to pay for it. And then they were fined for having letting him go to board the ship anyway. Whenever we went to Spain, was the same thing. And that was when the container started coming. And one night, just before dark, the bosun went up to check these. We were carrying cargo, you know, the containers.
Oh, yeah.
The container ships. And he went up to check them, make sure that they had them, they put cables on them to, so they wouldn't rattle. And when he got up there, he noticed that there was a square sign, which was for, you know, hazardous cargo. And he looked at it, and he says, something's wrong with that. And about then, he saw it move. When we had been in Spain, they had gotten into a container on the loading berth where they were going to the United States. They cut that thing out, crawled in there, and had all this stuff. And then when they saw that they were coming to pick this thing up down on the dock, they you know, hauled it in. They loaded them on, and it was about two boxes down. But from where the bosun had stood, he could see the man. So he went back and told the captain. The captain said, well, we'll take care of him in the morning. And we got into a storm. When the boats went up in the morning, these guys had this thing out, and they're waving and hollering. They want out.
Yeah. Probably a container full of puke by then.
Yeah. Oh, foolishness like that, you know. Yeah. I'd just like to add, if there's anybody, young people listening, that want to go into a good trade, It is a good job to get. It's a well-paying job. And, you know, if you pay attention, you can work your way up the thing and have a good life out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Les.
Well, that's a little more than just the clog story, but that was Lester Smallage talking about Merchant Marine. And
where did he live?
He lived in Pretty Marsh, just near me. Yep.
So all of his brothers went to sea?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting.
Did you do a lot of interviews like that?
No, not very many, actually.
But yeah.
He was just local, so I just, you know.
Grabbed him?
Yeah. Said, hey, how about if I come over and we'll talk about this? And yeah, good storyteller.
It's too bad more people don't do that because a lot of those good stories and the lives of those people are lost.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's one of the things that Boat Talk is good for. We're going to run out of time here shortly. But if you want to call in the future and tell boat stories, we're definitely listening. And the show gets recorded and archived forever. So
right.
That's one way to tell stories.
So he just gave us the two-finger.
Yeah.
So 2 minutes to go.
2 minutes to go before.
Can you talk about the roadkill in Bass Harbor?
Oh, the roadkill jelly donuts.
You got 2 minutes and we'll do it?
I'll tell the two-minute version and the minute-and-a-half version. Bass Harbor Marine, where I worked, was an affiliate of the Hinckley Company.
Mm-hmm.
And the way to get from Bass Harbor to the Hinckley Company then was to go by way of Seawall. And that involved a 90-degree corner in Bass Harbor. And apparently some delivery truck didn't close his rear doors tightly enough. And on the side of the road at that 90-degree corner on my way over to Hinckley's one time to do some sort of project, I could see there was a whole cardboard box that was slightly open. And I could see it was full of donuts. And there was a couple of rolls of cheese that were wrapped in plastic there. A couple of other, you know, just finding some food along the road. So I brought all those jelly donuts back to Bass Harbor Marine, and we had free jelly donuts for the day.
So is that the hard corner before you go down to the light?
Right.
Yeah, yes. I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Have they fixed the road?
No, and actually the DEP is saying that they really don't want to anymore because it's just going to happen again.
So we're not going to be able to go over there unless we have a monster truck?
You can't go over that. No, you're going to have to go around the Bass Harbor to get to the campground now.
Oh.
Yeah. So that's it for Boat Talk. Thanks to Pepin down in the engine room. And tune in again next week, next month, second Tuesday of the month, and hopefully we'll have some suggestions for names for hurricanes using the five letters that they don't use now.
Oh, I got some.
Yeah, I'll come up with some too.